Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today, coming to you from my basement out here in the Strip Plains of Colorado, and putting some things back together during the demise of Western civilization. That is finding solutions. And we need to find solutions, certainly, in an era in which youth unemployment is at 80%, twice what it was in 1999, prior to the last two recessions. And it has not recovered. 51% unemployment ratio for college graduates. It's way more than it was 10, 15 years ago. It's time to find solutions. And that's what we present on this program. Always looking for ways in which we can find a better economic solutions, better solutions for families who want to launch their children into their own household economies. And that's why the Family Economics Conferences that we're sponsoring every year, next year, four conferences. That's what our organizers are telling us. We have one in Canada, three here in America, including Denver in March. Please sign up today. Register now because that one's going to fill up fast. It's only going to take 1,000 registrants, and I'm sure that's going to be filled up quickly. So register today at familyeconomics.com. And specifically today, we want to talk about small companies and the benefits of small companies. I worked at a number of small companies, not super small, but I was second in command to the president of the company a couple of different times, worked in management, and over time figured out how to organize, how to keep customers happy, and how to produce adequate service and product for our customers. This is critical, I believe, for our young people as we train them for their own family economies. Personally, I prefer small companies, and I think we have more reasons to prefer small companies than ever. Number one, they're lean and mean. Number two, family economies can center around small companies. It's very difficult to hire out a family to Martin Marietta or Lockheed Martin and work as a family economy in a large corporate structure. Extremely difficult to do. Moreover, Obamacare exempts small companies with less than 50 employees. So if you don't want to play with the abortifacients, if you don't want to play with the heavily socialized form of medicine that's coming down the pike in 2014 and for the corporate mandate in 2015, if you don't want to play with that, join a small company. They're exempted from the corporate mandate, and that would enable way, way more signups for Christian Medical Sharing Ministries, which was exempted in the Obamacare bill. So lots and lots of reasons to get behind the small companies and form some of these islands of freedom and, I think, success in the upcoming economy. Because, hey, if these large companies are spending anywhere between $20,000 and $27,000 per family for those that are employed with their company because of the restrictions placed on them by Obamacare, and small companies, lean and mean, less than 50 employees, are exempted by this incredibly expensive form of insurance by way of the Christian Medical Sharing Ministries and the other exemptions, friends, the smaller companies are going to have the benefit in the free market in the years to come, period. They're going to be way ahead, and we'll be able to compete at a much higher level against the larger companies in the years to come. So I'm a big fan of small companies. I'm a big fan on exempting yourself from Obamacare. And I'm also a big fan of adequate management of our businesses. And this certainly is something we need to teach our children. So today we're going to talk with Aaron Crowley, who's got a new book out called Less Cash, Less Chaos, More Cash, and he joins me now on the Generations broadcast. Aaron, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Kevin, for having me. I appreciate it.
Aaron, you have been involved in a small company for quite some time now. You've written the book for small companies called Less Chaos, More Cash, and you have an interest in the family economy as well. In fact, I met you at the Washington Family Economics Conference in October. What's your interest in the small company and specifically in the family economy?
Well, I'd probably answer that question a couple of different ways. I think one of the other benefits of having a small business, in addition to the flexibility and the nimbleness that affords, is the fact that it strips all the illusions of security away. There is no big company, there is no guaranteed paycheck, and that has been profoundly helpful to my dependence on the Lord. That every day, every week, every month, when we face the realities that we face, there's nobody for us to look to but God. And coming through this recession for the last 5 years, the things I used to depend on myself for have been stripped away. And so in that respect alone, I think that that's an encouragement to people. And there's a lot of fear about going into business or starting a business because you face for the first time that sense that, that you know, you're responsible for the outcome. But the reality is that God is responsible for that. And being in business, you get to you're confronted by that. You get to face that every day. And I've seen that in the 15 plus years since I started this, our company, over and over again, the Lord has provided for us in circumstances where we said, boy, we are out of options. The bank has done this. The market's doing that. The economy is doing something else. And yet here we are, Lord, we've got nowhere to turn but you. And so that, yeah. That is a huge blessing. It's a terrifying thought, but once you're in the middle of it, it's just profound as it relates to learning to depend and walk with the Lord on a daily basis.
Aaron, I can't tell you how many times I've interviewed small family economies, oftentimes small family farms that are making it through organic farming and such. But they said, you know, once we moved out of the corporate structure to this family economy, we had to trust in God. We had to trust Him for the rain. We had to pray. We literally had to get down on our knees and pray, believe it or not. Before, we used to trust, you know, the federal government to provide the paycheck, or we had to trust the large corporation to provide for us. And so, you know, we'd had to plead with them. But now we have to pray. So I guess, you know, there's this sense in which we are more aware of our dependence upon God when we're working some of these entrepreneurial endeavors or building family economies. Using a multi-stream approach, as we talk about at our conferences. So you're right, that's a huge deal. Now, God has blessed your business over the years.
Yeah, we have been very fortunate to have, I had a great foundation. My parents raised me. I grew up in a Christian home. We're very, very encouraging of my entrepreneurial kind of tendencies, if you will, all through grade school, junior high, high school. And when I was 22, I quit my job and started a small granite countertop manufacturing company. And I also, you know, so my parents passed values along to me that were absolutely foundational. I also had a mentor, I won't mention his name, but he, gentleman I used to go to church with, took me under his wing. And I've said many times that my marriage and my business would not have survived the last 15 years if it had not been for his. It's hard to describe the level of involvement. I even mentioned in the introduction to my book that he took me under his wing and guided me when I didn't even realize I needed guidance. And he reached out to me, and I, you know, kind of grabbed his hand, and that relationship can it's changed a lot, but it continues to this day. And
that's a huge part of our vision for transforming economies in the 21st century. Aaron, as you know, we're big on mentorship. We think it's essential. We think that, you know, maybe some people cruised without it for the last couple of generations, but not anymore. With the present economy, you absolutely need mentorship. That's one reason we put together our Kickstart project to try to get young men especially connected with this concept of mentorship and prepare them to be good apprentices. And so, that's all part of the vision, I think. You're not going to be successful without decent mentorship, generally speaking.
No, and you know, to be able to catapult, you know, to take somebody who's been in the corporate world as my mentor had been, you know, for 20 or 25 years, and then in a highly concentrated, you know, span of a few years, just have immeasurably potent training and insight and wisdom that took, you know, decades to accumulate, just put right in front of you. And, you know, you obviously have to receive it and put it into practice. But the leaps and bounds that a young entrepreneur or a new, you know, family starting out in business, where you can just multiply your advancement by having somebody who's been there and then taking that advice and implementing it. Just I'm grasping for a good analogy for that, but it's like a rocket booster. It just takes you so far forward so rapidly. And I think, you know, in a historical sense, you could make the case that you really can't even expect to survive if you don't have wise counsel. I mean, you might limp along till the money runs out, but it's just critical.
Aaron, now at this point, you work with other small companies as well. Your book is to help those who have their own business to run it better, to manage it better. The book is called Less Chaos, More Cash. And what motivated you to write the book? Why did you write the book?
Well, I had a lot of motivators. One of them was a mentor. Another mentor in the realm of speaking said, "Aaron, if you want more speaking engagements, you got to have a book. You got to have some sort of credibility." And I said, "Okay." And this was a subject that I had been, there's kind of a practice, if you will, that I had been working through and implementing in my business. It had been a subject that I had presented on at some trade industry conventions, and was working on that with my speaking mentor, who was a world champion Toastmaster, and he said, "You got to write a book on this." And I said, "Okay." And so that was sort of the nitty gritty, you know, blatantly honest motivation for writing the book. But the other side of it was that I do business with a lot of companies that started out just like me, that had a skill. And a desire to go into business, but very quickly the organization grew beyond my ability to manage it effectively. And I found myself out making promises, you know, to the customer and making promises that then my organization, it, to my disbelief, was not capable of meeting. And
like the old advertisement, "We can do that, we can do that, we can do that." The guy hangs up the phone and says, "Can we do that?"
Exactly, exactly. Or in my case, I just thought because I said it and because in my mind I could do it, that it would automatically get done.
Yeah.
And so I lived this life of just utter chaos for years. Indescribable frustration at my inability to translate what I knew I could do myself physically. I could pick up a measuring tape, measure a granite countertop cabinet, come back to my shop, cut the slab, put a polish on it, grab somebody and haul it back out to the customer's house and install it. But when I had, you know, 7, 8, 10, you know, employees that, and someone was out measuring it and someone was back at the shop cutting it, someone else was running the machine to put the edge on it, and a different crew was taking it out to install it. All kinds of things could take place between the time I made that promise to the customer and the actual finished product showed up. And that was where I think the impetus came is how do I, and through mentorship and reading and a lot of study and enormous amount of coaching through another coaching program I was involved in, I kind of arrived at this principle, what I call in the book, the process, and PRO is an acronym for position, result, and operation.
Yeah. And Aaron, let me also stop you for a moment and say that I think every Christian business owner, every Christian family economy wants to be an economy that is based in integrity, that tells the truth, that keeps promises, that that delivers on what was promised. And even when I was working in the corporate world, you know, I worked probably harder than anybody to try to meet the demands that our leadership signed up for. And oftentimes, you know, they were not honest people, but I tried to follow through on what they said we would do. And I think it's important that we do so, not just to make the buck, but just simply because we follow Christ. And we have every obligation in the world to meet expectations for our customers. If they're paying a price and they're expecting a certain product that was advertised on the brochure, we want to deliver that. And I think that's appropriate as a Christian to demand that, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And I think most business owners and definitely most Christian business owners make those promises in good faith. It's just that they lack the organizational ability to ensure that all of those incremental critical tasks happen at every point along the way, so that on the appointed day, you know, the product shows up or the service is delivered as was originally promised to the customer. So that was sort of my other motivation for writing the book. You know, man, maybe there's a lot of other people like me who just in the interest of trying to keep that promise, just ran myself ragged.
What happens when you don't deliver? Aaron, what happens when you drop the ball? You're a fledgling company. You're getting off the ground. You've got the good project, the good project that's going to yield you, you know, $10,000 and keep it going for another 2 months, but you drop the ball. What happens?
Well, in this day and age, you know, information travels fast. People like to share their experiences, and they're, at least in the contracting world, you cannot escape a bad name. And if you do not deliver on the promise, you are going to have to spend more and more time and more money to go actively find new customers fill the schedule or to, you know, to maintain the sales that you need to make a living. And so, you know, you end up, you ruin relationships that you've already established, and then you end up spending a lot of money that you could otherwise save or invest in other places going out and finding new business. And in my case, and this was the thing my mentor was so influential in, is I worked round the clock. I mean, I was so overwhelmed with the demands of the organization that really lacked any organization that I had to be everywhere at once at all times. And so my family, you know, saw less and less and less of me as the organization grew. It, you know, kind of compounded the fact that there was no organization there and required more and more of my time frantically racing around trying to pick up the slack so that we could, in fact, you know, keep the promise to the customer. And so then you go on and on the call, you know, employees that get frustrated operating in an environment like that quit. They go, I'm not dealing with this kind of chaos. I'm out of here. You know, the cost of rehiring and training is huge. The cost of rework, you know, you ship the wrong product across the country because you don't have processes in place to ensure, you know, how things are verified or what have you, and you've now maybe ruined the customer's opportunity to deliver their product to their customer.
And now I have to tell you, I have to confess something, and I'm sure some of our listeners understand what we've gone through ourselves as an organization. Now, what I have done is I have established a family economy around Generations with Vision. My children do a lot of the work. I have a couple of young men that I mentor and process. We don't have a huge organization. We generally speaking, the average age of our employees is about 17.
Yes.
That's great. So, I'm constantly begging people for a little patience and long suffering as I'm mentoring alongside this fledgling bunch, you know, in the cave of Adullam as we're trying to reform Western civilization. You know, it's kind of a rinky dink operation at points. But we have had to shore things up and establish systems of quality. We do a full quality check on every package sent out of here. Now, you know, it may wind up being Abigail who does it, but she's pretty good at it. At 13 years of age, she does some of the best quality work that any of us do. So we typically use her as the quality inspector for the product that leaves our organization. So, you know, again, you know, what you're saying here applies to all of us. Why is it, do you think, that family economies, young entrepreneurs aren't quite ready for management?
Well, boy.
I mean, this is you, right? This is you.
Yeah, I'll give you my, you know, I worked for a company that that was relatively dysfunctional, and so the only, in terms of my own, you know, failure to be able to do this was that I had never been associated with a company. I had never been in a management position before. I had never managed my own time. I mean, I was a operating level employee one day. The next day, I was self-employed, and you know, not too long after that, I was hiring people, and. And so I think it's a lack of understanding. And in the book, I make the premise that the fundamental kind of underlying reason that a lot of those critical tasks aren't performed correctly and on time is because business owners, leaders who are real familiar with doing what it is their organization sets out to do fall into what I call the deadly assumption, which is the belief that some work is so obvious and simple and obviously important that it need not be explained. And it's sort of a subconscious trap that we fall into that, you know, I do this second nature. The thought has never even crossed my mind that I need to explain it to somebody. You know, is it obvious that this is what you do when you're packing a book in an envelope and slapping a label on it and shipping it? I mean, isn't that obvious to everybody?
It's
not obvious to a 13-year-old who's never, you know, packaged product and shipped it before. And that, I think, is where the disconnect comes in, is that it's not ill will. It's subconscious, and we just assume everybody knows how to do everything that we do. And so all I got to do is tell you to do it, and you'll automatically know how to do it. Well, you need to lay out, you know, not only who is to do it, you need to lay out the measurable standards. You know, what is the result that we're trying to achieve here? And then I lay out the last and final step is that you got to provide people the pathway. You know, here's when it has to ship. This has got to ship by 9 o'clock in the morning after the order is received. But you also got to give them the steps to how they process the order. What is step one? What is step two? What's step 9, 10, and 11? And I like to ask people in presentations, I say, well, how many of you like to cook? And, you know, there are all these people that raise their hands. I say, well, let me ask you this. Could you pull a cookbook off the shelf, drop it onto the countertop, and read a recipe for the very first time, close the cookbook, put it back up on the shelf, and then cook the dish without referring back to the recipe, you know, 5, 7, 10, 15 times? And everybody goes, well, no, that'd be impossible. I refer back to recipes that I cook all the time, you know, regularly. And I think the same thing is true when you are delegating a task to a son or daughter, an employee. It doesn't really matter. You've got to give them the recipe. This is step one in writing.
Hmm. Aaron, how do you identify the critical tasks? Because I know that the word critical is important here. You don't want to drop the ball on the product or service that you're providing. How do you identify that critical task or those critical tasks?
That is a great question. I define that by the tasks that directly impact the customer's experience or the bottom line. And in our business, granite countertop manufacturing, you know, if a door doesn't get locked, you know, the customer's still going to get their countertop on time. And, you know, it's not going to really cost us unless somebody breaks in. But when it's translating critical information on the job that has to be, you know, put into production, that's a different story. If that's not done, the job's done wrong, and we incur all kinds of costs, you know, to redo the job. And so anything that directly impacts the customer's experience or the bottom line in the form of rework or, you know, mistakes is a critical task.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What have you learned in terms of delegation? I mean, you talked a little bit about training. And you talked about how, you know, you were trying to do everything yourself. I think that's probably one of the most difficult issues for the businessman or the family economy that's just trying to integrate their children into the process.
Well, it seems like it works against our nature. There is a sense, and this is my personal experience, is not to suggest everybody is like this, but there's a sense that I know how to do this, and if I do it myself, I know it's done right.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon you're doing more than you really should, or things get out of balance. And I think
it's hard to surrender ownership.
Yeah.
You know, because we get kind of our arms tied around everything. We want to do it all ourselves, and we don't think about how training somebody else to the job could be a very rewarding experience for them, and it would empower them to be involved in the process.
Yeah. You're right, and it requires trust.
Yeah.
You know, to let go of those tasks that we might like to do or might think that, you know, I'm the only one capable of actually, you know, quoting projects. Everybody can do everything else, but I've got to do the quotes. Well, you know, that's not true. And at some point, that has to be delegated. And so being able to bring yourself to trust somebody else to do it is hard for me in a variety of areas within our business.
Yes. Well, as we wrap up the interview here, Aaron, I just want you to kind of summarize some of your vision for your family economy. What are you going to teach your kids in terms of business, and how are you going to get them involved, do you think?
Well, we're kind of in process, if you will. We have the company that I own right now, or I'm a steward of, requires me to leave, and it is a relatively dangerous manufacturing environment that doesn't lend itself well to kids running around.
Yeah.
But we have another little business that we started some years ago that is more oriented around shipping and receiving. And we are just, with the vision that I feel the Lord has given me to change my focus away from that more visible professional environment back to, you know, discipling my children in a business setting. Where, you know, the business is not just our source of income, but it's a place where I can disciple my kids. It's a place that I can pass on the trade, you know, of running a small organization. It has my level of excitement about that possibility is, as I was telling you earlier, is pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
And I just see so many great opportunities to impact the kingdom and, you know, to have a family business, but that is also a ministry. There's a lot of marketplace ministry movement going on right now, and the Lord has opened my eyes to that, you know, there are so many people that we come into contact that have no hope every single day in the business setting. Yeah. Employees, suppliers, customers, I mean, you name it. And we have relationships with them. I mean, there's people that we talk to on a daily basis, that we interact with, that we work alongside. And it's like, my gosh, you know, that has got to be incorporated into the business and, you know, the family economy. So when I look at I hate to put it in terms of, you know, efficiencies, but when you look at what a family, you know, economic system offers in the terms of being able to pass along your trade or your skills as a business owner or some other profession, to be able to disciple your kids along that and then do ministry in a sense with your family in the process, it just seems like it's, instead of being fractured and I go to work and I do my work there to provide our income, and we go out here and we do ministry, and then we come back here and we do family. It just seems like it's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah. And that's really what's happened to us too over the years, Aaron. I mean, as I worked out of the corporate world more into ministry, and then we developed multiple streams of income and economic and ministry endeavor. And in the process, you know, we've integrated the family into all these different things. And I think it's been fruitful. I think it's been edifying. I think we have maximized the efficiency of our home over the years. And I couldn't be more happy about this vision, honestly. I think that, you know, and again, we're not telling every family to do exactly what we did. We're just telling people to open your eyes and ask the Lord for opportunities for developing the family integrated economy in the 21st century. Find ways in which the family can be together, can work together, or produce multiple income streams together, and thereby hopefully prepare our sons and our daughters for their future economy in their early years. So you're not waiting until your son is 18 years old or 24 years old or 26 years old to put down his video game and get productive. I think that needs to happen when he's 10 or 12 or 14. And that's the kind of message, of course, we take to our family economics systems. And the other point that I wanted to make is that, you know, we started out, many of us started out in the corporate world. We started out working apart from, say, a family economy. But over time, we have morphed into the family economy. And none of the preparatory work that I went through in the 1980s and 1990s was a waste. All of this I've brought to bear in all of these different income streams that we work as a family economy. So I think we want to encourage everybody listening that you can develop a family economy, and what you're doing right now could be very helpful in developing that family economy in the years to come. In your case, you know, you would never have written this book. You would never have been on the speaking tours. You would never have established some of these other income streams had it not been for your involvement in small business.
Yeah, and that is such an encouragement that I came away from the conference in Washington a couple of months ago. I went there kind of thinking, okay, I think the Lord's calling me to run my business from home, so I got to figure out a way to leave, you know, my manufacturing company today so I can start my family economy tomorrow. And boy, the encouragement that I received, I came away from that with a lot of great stuff. But one of the things was the sense of peace that, you know, it's okay for there to be a transition period where it morphs. It doesn't just happen overnight, and that was a huge encouragement to me to know that all of this is sort of working towards that ideal. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to happen overnight.
And I think your book also could be very helpful for a lot of small businesses and family economies out there. Less chaos, more cash. How do they get a copy of your book, Aaron?
Well, you can go to lesschaosmorecash.com and order a copy, and you can get them off of Amazon, although the Amazon book is paperback. The books off of our website are hardback and a much nicer copy.
Okay, very good. Well, ladies and gentlemen, more information on Aaron Crowley's website and his book, Less Chaos, More Cash. Just go to lesschaosmorecash.com and pick up a copy of that today. And folks, you need to connect with our Family Economics Conferences, man. If you've missed these conferences, or you need a little more encouragement or some more ideas, ways in which you can incorporate this large principle into your own family life, then come on down to one of our Family Economics Conferences this year, this next next year, 2014, one in Denver, one out in Ohio, and one in Kansas City. So the one in Denver is scheduled for March of 2014. It is filling up fast. Register now at FamilyEconomics.com. Aaron Crowley, thanks again for joining us on Generations, my friends. Stay in touch with us.
Will do.
And this is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.